Thanks for being with me tonight on Coast to Coast. My guest is David Sirita. We are talking about the history of these vortex energies, this fusion power that he is giving us a great accounting of in terms of the history of it. And we were right in the middle of a great story where he's floating in a gully. So we're going to come back and find out more about this. I'm enjoying hearing from you. I'm getting a lot of your emails coming in at my email is news@theawareshow.com. That's theawareshow.com. It's great hearing from you. I look forward to it. And we'll be back with David Sirita in just a minute. Welcome back. My guest is David Sirita, and we're talking about these the history of vortex energies. And David, you were in the middle of a great story. You're in your father's backyard in a tent. It's freezing rain. You start floating. The water comes up under your tent. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. I mean, I could have just gone in the house, but I was really depressed. You know, I'd had all my finances taken away from me.
You were freezing.
Yeah, and I had planted 70,000 trees a year. You know, I planted 1.3 million trees in my life, and I was like,
wow,
no money. Nobody wanted to fund MAG, which is Fusion Drive. And I was like, you know, the world's not going to change. I'm just going to give up, and God, take me. I literally said, God, take me. And, you know, I was doing a lot of yoga and hardcore Buddhist meditation at that time in my life. And it's very surprising what happened, but I left my body, and it's very electric when you leave your body. And I floated over to the oak trees in the pouring rain before sunrise, and there was a crucifix with a baptismal font shaped like a cross beneath it. And the water was calling me. It was like angelic sounds coming from the water. I fell in the water in spirit and got baptized and went above the rain clouds. And I thought, I'm dead. You know, I died. You know, what's going to happen? You know, it's over. I'm really above the clouds, above Topanga. And you could see the sun hasn't risen on the horizon. It's very faint glow on the horizon, like you're sitting at the top of Haleakala in
Maui. Sounds beautiful.
It's very beautiful, and it was very peaceful. There was no suffering, emotional suffering in that state. But then millions of atoms of light, like little tiny stars of brilliant light, rushed from above, below, and behind me, and they just coalesced instantly in this deafening clap of sound and materialized the body of Christ in front of me, which was blinding like a thousand of our suns. I look at him for 1 second and look down, look at him for 1 second and look down, and he came floating over to me and started teaching me who he was, quantum physics, atoms, subatomic particles, and I was in so much ecstasy and love in his presence. I'm crying my eyes out, and it's like, why him? Why am I seeing him? I'm not even, you know, I mean, I'm Catholic by birth, but our family didn't practice it. I was more Buddhist, but I was blown away at the magnitude of his power. And I'm not going to go into that too much because I'm going to stay on what happens next.
But that's fascinating. I mean, it sounds amazing.
It changed my life.
Yes.
For me, he's the greatest being in the local universe, at the very least. I mean, I wrote a whole book about it. But what happens next is within days, I can see the dead. I can see star beings and spirit beings almost every other day.
So you were floating in and out of these different dimensions.
Well, I was visually seeing them, and I built a yurt on a big deck on my dad's ranch. And I had a BMW parked in the mud, you know, next to the horses. And very shortly, I'd be working for Magwitch again and working on landmines. And so I was really loving living in this yurt, and which was had really high ceilings, higher ceilings than most people's bedrooms. And, you know, four windows, very secure building. And one night, these three basketball balls of light appear right in front of me. I wake up in the middle of the night. I feel this electricity coming into my body. And there are these balls of light, and one was pinkish and about the size of a beach ball, and one was pure pearly white and shimmering, and one was blue, kind of purple. And they're joking around. They're cracking jokes, and they're laughing and talking to me in English, and they know about my meeting with Jesus, and they said, "We're Arcturians. We're from Arcturus." And I'm like, "What? What's Arcturus?" You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, think as I'm telling you this, the balls of light that are captured in space on some of the video shows very small balls of light, and the ones that form this crop circle formation in the middle of the, you know, sky above the earth when the shuttle was, I think they were over Africa at the time. And during the tether incident, incidentally, the pyramid is passing right over Northwest Africa and the pyramids of Egypt.
As these vortexes were being
right. So it's very significant later on. But so these balls of light are in my room, and I'm like, I wonder if someone else could see them, and they're joking around, and I'm like, you guys better leave because I don't know who you are. And they thought they were funny, but I was nervous. I mean, the hardest part actually about seeing a spirit being isn't the visual, it's how much you feel them. And their consciousness is so foreign to us, it's quite challenging, I should just say, challenging.
Unfamiliar, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Balls of light joking and telling you they're from another star, which I've never heard of Arcturus at the time. So the next day, I'm like, you know, phoning New Age friends. I was more Buddhist, more into just feeling the presence of the universe. And my experiences with Christ made me instantly a Christian mystic, and I was doing a lot of Christian mystic practices. So to meet these beings from Arcturus was very, very, you know, strange. And so no one had heard of Arcturus, and I'm like, there's no star called Arcturus. It took me literally weeks for someone to tell me there's a book called We the Arcturians by Norma Milanovich, and she describes the same three colors that I saw in her book, and I read it. I'm like, oh, my God, and there's a star called Arcturus in the Booth constellation.
Right.
So these guys aren't kidding around. Well, it turns out in the crop circles, that it's common knowledge that a lot of the circles are made by beings from Arcturus, and the same balls of light are captured on video making the circles. And I'm sitting there talking to them. So, which sounds unbelievable, but this is what had happened. Christ had done something to me so I could see beings. I saw my grandmother when she passed away on my mother's side. And it's so amazing to see them that super clearly.
Does it still exist today with you?
It lasted for 14 years.
Okay.
And before my wife and I were pregnant and we didn't get ultrasound. And all the psychics in Sedona were saying we're having a boy, so we had a name for the boy. And one night, there's a little girl appears beside the bed, and she's laughing like, you know, she knows the joke that there's a girl coming. And I said, Crystal, you know, there's a little girl, and she looks kind of like you, and she's laughing, and she's got really bright light. I mean, out of probably at least 500 ghosts and spirit beings I've seen in my life, full 3D, eyes open. She's got one of the brightest auras I've ever seen. I've never seen an aura this bright on a child, I mean, let alone a saint, which would be even brighter than that. So when you know, my wife went into labor in 2010 in October, and we had a girl. And so it's the last one I saw with my eyes open.
Oh, that's the that's
my own daughter is like the closure. But
interesting. So, all right. So you're in this. Okay. So you were floating in this gully, and you saw the beings of light, which were the Arcturians. Arcturians.
Yeah, I was living on the hillside at that point, which is right behind the Inn of the Seventh Ray in Topanga Canyon.
Ah, I know exactly where that is.
Right up on the hill. I used to hear the weddings.
That's where I got married.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
Well, Jesus would only come to me there. He came three times. He only came when I was in the yurt and on the tent. So, but this is where it gets really, really amazing is, okay, remember the spiral vortex in the NASA UFO, only months later, because that was actually March when that happened, when the space shuttle was passing over the pyramids in Egypt, which is
96.
A clue
mm-hmm.
that we'll get into later in the pyramids. And all of a sudden, months later in July, right across from Stonehenge in a farmer's field, there was a pilot who had just flown over Stonehenge, and he said the field was bare. He turns around and flies back, and there's this perfect spiraling vortex crop circle formation coming right out of like a black hole, like a round hole, just exactly the degree of curvature of the NASA UFO, which is, you can see this on the video on Coast to Coast if you go on the website.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Inside the quantum vortex. I mean, it's a perfect match. I actually spun it around. And considering there's different degrees of curvatures for spirals, they're a perfect match. And I'm like, oh my God, it's the same message. And
I saw the video on that crop circle, and there's you cannot replicate the way that the wheat was bent through any other type of heat or any other type of modality. it's impossible because it was bent without being burnt.
Exactly, and there was no paddle boards. And sometimes these British intelligence paddleboard guys come in to mess up a real circle, because sometimes researchers see the real bends, you know, the non-stepped on nodes and the nice, you know, smooth bends. And then there's all this paddleboard damage to make it look like it was fake, and they get in there fast and mess it up. But that circle was real, and I knew it was the same message about the vortex, that the vortex was the key to not only nuclear fusion, but later we'll see faster-than-light communication signaling, which I've done with technology that I've developed that's now available for people, and also actual opening up micro wormholes that a physical person or craft can move through. And I've actually seen, building these devices myself in my own vortex coils, I've seen physical objects actually, I've had them disappear. I mean, unmistakable.
Wow, really?
This has happened a number of times. So the vortex is so key, and now it's appearing in all the crop circles. And my evidence, the case for NASA UFO DVD, which was 3 hours long, and this section on the galaxy clock is in there, it got 3 million views in less than a month in the year 2000 and 2001. And then the DVD doesn't really sell that well because the internet is born and everyone is obsessed with this thing.
Mm-hmm. On YouTube, yeah.
On YouTube. It wasn't YouTube back then. It was Google Video. And people have now reposted parts of that very old DVD all over the place.
Right.
Sections of it. And so what happens now is vortex math just sweeps the world. And there's new people like Marco Rodin, who's somebody I really admire, who saw my video, and he develops this, he told me he saw the video and he loved it, but he's got a new theory on vortex math, and Marco Rodin's math is so brilliant. The guy's such a genius. He kind of, I won't say he takes it to the next level, because I was already designing my own coils, but I didn't put my videos on YouTube like everyone else did, but I do show in that video my pyramid angle vortex coil. There's a sample of one of my coils on the video on your site. And I start testing my coils and doing things, and amazing things are happening. But this revolution is going on. See, it's really amazing how this happens. First there's a revelation in vortex mathematics. Then there's crop circles that are imprinting the vortex and the geometries and the clockwise, counterclockwise.
The same pattern.
Mm-hmm. The same pattern in our consciousness. And from that, Marco Rodin really inspires these. He's not a coil maker. He doesn't make electronic coils. He doesn't do electrical engineering like I do and other people do. And these guys over the years, I'm watching their videos on YouTube, and their vortex coils are getting better and better and better. And I find this guy, Russ Greaves, who's in the middle of his vortex. He's got a heavy ball magnet with very little power doing 60,000 RPMs. That's the first test. Now, no jet engine, no electric engine spins at 60,000 RPMs today. There's no motor you can buy that can spin that fast. The vortex engines inside of the Pratt Whitney and the Rolls-Royce engines that power our fastest military jets are doing maybe, peaking at 100,000 RPMs if they're lucky. They're maybe 10,000 RPMs. They're breaking the speed of sound.
And these guys are developing this other at 60,000.
Well, no, that's just the beginning, because Russ Greaves finds a way to power his vortex coil. And I've been talking to him on Skype. We've had a long, long talk about how to take the vortex coil to the next level. But basically, he's up to almost 700,000 RPMs.
In his garage?
In his garage.
That's amazing.
So you see how it goes? It goes from, my video to vortex math to crop circles, and now it's translating into these coils. And when you see a magnetic field spinning that fast, and it can grab a magnet, because electrons are like billiard balls running through your copper wire, lighting your light bulbs and your computers, they move at about 3/4 the speed of light and copper. But they won't drag a magnet that fast. But if you power them right and you design them right, if you can spin a magnet that fast with very little power, with a bigger coil and you stack them in a lot of power, the first revelation I see is that you could have an electric jet engine that would be so much faster than the, you know, fuel-powered jet engines and the afterburners, that you could have vertical lift floating cars and planes going so much faster than we are today.
So what is the source, the original source of this energy? Does it need to get ignited or started by electromagnetic energy?
Well, that's a great question, because the deepest part of this is so profound that we're very stuck on the way we use electricity today. I mean, we use electricity at 60, you know, waves a second to light our light bulbs and power refrigerators and our electronics. And we use electric motors to power electric cars at a certain pulse rate. And we use engines in the electric cars are way more primitive than these vortex coils. It could revolutionize even electric cars. But there's a force there and a way of using energy that is so deep, that is so profound, that I believe the UFOs themselves are actually using.
Right.
That's what I saw when I was a kid.
It looks like it. I mean, from what I've seen you on your videos, it definitely looks like that is the sort that...
Yeah, and there's something I haven't put in the video yet that may explain where the missing Boeing plane went. I use this same technology to build vortex coil transmitters, and I was able to calculate the frequencies of distant star systems, because NASA knew the radius of distant stars like Sirius and the Pleiades. They knew the radius on 5 Pleiadian suns. I said, I know how to do its frequency based on the radius. And I started pulsing my body and my wife sleeping, you know, where we sleep in. We were living in Sedona at the time, and I started pulsing our room with the frequencies of Pleiades. And there's a Nobel Prize winner named Luc Montagné who proved that human DNA, which is a coil, it's actually a vortex coil, in the middle of all of our cells.
Hmm.
And it was proven by a German biophysicist named Fritz Albert Popp that DNA seems to be transmitting faster than the speed of light signals from all living things.
Because we all have frequencies, yes.
Because we generate
plants,
frequencies.
Trees, everything has a frequency.
Yeah, you can see in my video, I do this test where I run the frequency of the Great Pyramid Capstone, 5.151 megahertz square, through my body, and my other hand gets near a meter, which is picking up the frequency 4 inches away from my fingers, which means I'm transmitting frequencies. And you're actually transmitting and receiving all the time, but on a way weaker scale than that meter can see. But it shows that the frequencies run through my body and don't stop. They actually transmit.
So you were pumping in these Pleiadian frequencies into your room.
So I'm pumping. Once I knew that I could do this, I actually did a recording of my wife, Crystal, singing Fly Me to the Moon, the Frank Sinatra song. And the very first test I did was about 4 or 5 years ago. And it was actually before our daughter was born. And I just sent it out through the transmitter at those harmonics. And in the middle of the night, now I hadn't seen spirits in a while. They really faded off even before my daughter appeared, before she was born. I wasn't seeing them all the time anymore. And it was quite rare. So in the middle of the night, after the transmission, which was my birthday, August 21st of that year, I hear this male voice. Now, I'm not hearing this in my head. It's audible in the room. Very smooth, velvety male voice saying, congratulations, we received your message. Now what do you want to ask us? And I leaped out of bed and went, oh, my God, it worked. What Nobel Prize winner Luc Montagné proved is your DNA can read the frequency of Earth. He actually tested a frequency very close to the Earth. It's a little coil transmitter receiver that reads all frequencies. And we're constantly, before technology was born, we're being pulsed by the frequency of Earth, which Tesla found to be 7.83 hertz in Colorado Springs. And we're being pulsed by the frequencies of the planet and the sun, and very faint frequencies from distant star systems are actually coming in.
So we're
naturally receiving the local frequencies of the local solar system.
But you figured out how to get in and out of these wormholes
and
through frequencies.
Right. In fact,
Fascinating. Gosh, we have to take a break,
Take a break.
David.
Oh,
Darn it.
darn it.
I know. This is such a good cliffhanger, though. All right, I want to find this out. So we will be right back. Hang on for us. You're listening to Coast to Coast. My guest is David Sarita. I'm Lisa Garr. We'll be right back. My guest is David Sarita tonight, and he is a filmmaker, mystic ecologist, space scientist, physicist. He is talking about technologies that he has created and has learned how to make contact with beings from other star systems. We're going to find out how this is possible when we come back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. This is Lisa Garr, and we are going to be taking your calls at the top of the hour. My guest is David Sarita, and be fascinated to hear what you have to say about this conversation and questions that you have for David. David, now you were talking about using this technology to make contact with beings from other star systems and actually pumping in the Pleiadian frequencies into, basically using that to communicate. Tell me about this experience that you had with the Stargates, and how did you bring in that frequency? That was something that you instigated, right?
Yeah, what I did is I did the math, because NASA uses an accurate system called parallax, which can give you the radius of a star. And the way a frequency works is all stars and planets basically pulse and are inducted, electrically inducted, to cause oscillations of electrons, you know, which are the E, the electricity, you know, the E in electricity in your wires, to spin around the star and the planet. When the electrons move fast enough, which is easy to do, you get a speed of light oscillation at the equator that spins all the way up to the north and the south pole of, you know, a planet and a star. So if you know the distance around the star or the planet, you just take the speed of light and divide that by the distance around the star, which is your wavelength, and you got your frequency. And NASA knows the radiuses of dozens and dozens of stars. And because your DNA reads frequencies, and Fritz Albert Popp, the German biophysicist, proves, he didn't just theorize, he proved and tested that DNA transmits faster than light signaling. And he did it with plants, and he did it with human DNA. That means there's a new type of transmitter that can be made to talk to distant worlds. The way we're talking now on the radio is people can tune in either on the internet.
Through a frequency, right?
Through to a frequency. Mm-hmm. And when any two or more, they use quartz crystal and these little things called crystal oscillators to generate that frequency. They use real quartz. And when everyone's at the same frequency, we're all together hearing, you know, you and I now on the radio.
But that quartz is like at the radio tower?
No, they use quartz crystal in tiny little quartz crystal oscillators today, tiny ones, to generate really high frequencies so that we can transmit, you know, information. But when two quartz crystals are at the same frequency, regardless of their distance, they're at the speed of light communication. So we think. But DNA seems to transmit faster. So now you can Google on the internet DNA transistors, and the military's developing
them
now because they know. But it gets more amazing than that. I don't believe it's the DNA that's transmitting the signal. I found out what it is. You see, when you eat vegetables, you're absorbing silica, which is quartz crystal. And you store it in the different glands in your body. So your body has quartz crystal in it. There's a physicist at Berkeley, UC Berkeley, named Raymond Chow, and he did this years ago in the 90s, and I called him up. He used a crystal light source and split two beams of light and sent one of the beams through a thin sheet of silica. Quartz crystal is silica, and oxygen bond and glass is silica. And it went 1.7 times the speed of light, and he got all the way up to like 30-something times the speed of light, sending light beams through silica. So I said, what does silica look like under the microscope? How do the atoms bond, and what is the geometry? Because every element on the periodic table, from lithium to oxygen to all of it, has a geometry. The geometry of silica is a three-sided pyramid. And what happens with micropyramids, or any size pyramid, is an electromagnetic wave bobs up and down, or is actually spinning, and when it approaches the base of the pyramid, the shape of the pyramid forces it to compress. and it becomes super high frequency at the tip. Now, they know this because in Raymond Chow's faster than light experiments, they found that the light wave would go on its normal wavelength and then shrink and get super high frequency and quantum tunnel. They use the word quantum tunnel. And it went faster than light. Well, I said, it's the pyramid that's doing it. So that means it turns out plants absorb silica to surround their cells to protect them from viruses. So the cell is surrounded by quartz crystal. If you get enough quartz crystal in your body, the DNA is just the transmitter in the center of the cell. The wave then approaches the silica tetrahedron three-sided pyramid, and it quantum tunnels it and goes faster than light.
Okay, so let's talk about the quantum tunneling, because doesn't that go back to the coil?
It goes back to the vortex coil, because quantum tunneling is an amazing phenomenon. We're very new at understanding quantum tunneling, and quantum tunneling is so powerful, it could actually physically cause things to disappear. I'll give you an example. I mean, we started harmonically treating quartz crystal because I found a way to program quartz crystal with the vibration of our sun, as NASA had recorded the sound of our sun, which had profound healing effects and soothing effects for the nervous system. And I programmed pendants, toroidal pendants that are vortex-wound pendants with those frequencies. And when people touch them, you can see on a voltmeter in my video, you can increase the energy of the body on the millivolt scale, which means thousands of a volt scale, and you can see the aura gets brighter when it connects with these pendants. So what that means is that the same thing is happening in your body. The quartz is oscillating when you connect with it, and it becomes like a little bio transformer and increases the amount of light that comes off of you. And it can be actually red. So that's very important data, because we know what is actually doing it is your biology, your electric signals in your body are starting to become harmonized with this little resonator. But now what happens on a bigger scale when you have giant pyramids instead of tiny ones? See, we make everything tiny, 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 tiny pieces of quartz, 3 billion quartz crystal transistors in an Intel computer chip. Transistors amplify signals and crystal oscillators tune them, and they're all so small now because frequencies are getting higher and higher and higher, and higher and higher frequencies mean smaller and smaller oscillations. But so I decided, what if a tiny pyramid can cause quantum tunneling of a telecommunication wave in the DNA as well as in actual electronics, then what would happen with a giant pyramid? Why would they... If the ancient Egyptians needed to talk to their gods and goddesses in distant star systems, you don't need an oscillator that big. Why such a big one? And this gets utterly mind-bending, because you realize that anything physical that has any size, a UFO or a person, needs... We're all made. Our nervous system is running ions, which are basically an extra electron attached to an atom. So we're oscillating in our nervous system. You can see from the test in the video that electricity transmits through most likely the minerals in the crystal that we store in the 7 chakra gland centers in the body. Most likely that's what's happening in the nervous system, because you need crystal and you need metal, or meaning minerals like gold and silver and all the minerals we take in our food, to cause oscillations to happen, to transmit. So we know the test that I did means we actually transmit. But if you can spin the electrons in a vortex in a physical person or an object with a way bigger oscillator, you can send it through a quantum tunnel wormhole. And what has actually happened over the years, you know, we've been selling these quartz crystal pendants. We've had many people do this. Our friend Katrine in Russia takes her pendant with a long silver chain. Mm-hmm. This is highly charged quartz crystal. Huge oscillations go through this quartz crystal. She sets it on the bed, goes into the shower, and comes out. It's gone. And her and her dad searched the whole room, and it's gone. A year later, the bedroom has been swept clean and vacuumed dozens of times. Her dad walks up the stairs, and it's sitting in the middle of the floor where anyone would have stepped on it over the years, and it's back. And I've had that happen with at least 6 people have gone into the shower. It's always the shower, and they come out. When you run water, you get a lot of ions in the air. So I thought, maybe that's doing it. Well, A friend of mine made a pyramid house in Tofino, British Columbia. His name is Jeff Reeves, and he lined it to magnetic north. You get a lot of ions in the salt water in the surf when the surf is turning. And this is perfectly flat ground. I mean, I've been in and slept in this house. And when he made it, he asked one of the workers to throw him a box cutting knife. It's a, you know, 7-inch little metal blade thing. It lands by his boot, and he finishes hammering a nail, and he looks back, and it's gone. He stops all construction on the site and has the workers grid the entire site. The thing is gone. Now, where did it go? Where did my crystal pendants go? Now, I built a large pyramid quartz crystal oscillator, you know, millions of times bigger than the oscillators used in radios and cell phones.
Where?
And I built it in Sedona, and I started using it. And one night, you know, every night in our house, it's my religion. I go around the house and turn out the lights. And my little daughter is 2 years old at this time. She's never taken a light bulb out of a socket, and she never leaves my side or my wife's side. So mm-hmm. I turn out her light in her playroom, which is big enough to fit through the vortex in the middle of my coil underneath my quartz crystal oscillator. And I run the new pyramid oscillator in the room, and I'm meditating, and I go to sleep. And my wife gets up early. Baby's not even up yet. She goes into the playroom. Baby runs to the playroom, and she goes to turn the light on, and the light bulb is gone. It's not even in the socket. It's gone. And now that's impossible.
Hmm.
So these are small objects, right?
Right. So how do you explain a jet?
See, now how you explain it is, okay, I did a transmission to the Pleiades, and I addressed Pleiadian Council using my Pleiadian harmonics, and I said, I had no imagery in my mind of who Pleiadian Council was, and I'd already met them many, many times.
I would love to know what they look like.
I know. They're very human. They're taller than us, but they're very human. The adults are much older, and I have wonderful stories to tell about the fun and meeting them and how excited they were that my device opened up a mini vortex wormhole that connects to a super light highway that connects between our sun and our solar system and theirs, and it's been there for thousands of years.
Huh. Wow.
So all you got to do is know the frequency, just like a radio, and then you dial into that vortex and it takes you there.
Sounds so simple.
Well, that night, Anubis, the Egyptian god who was the son of Nephthys, the mm-hmm. sister of Isis, appears to me, and he's a black dog with a gold collar around his neck, and he's speaking in my language, English, and he shows me thousands of years ago that when the pyramids were working, he said, you know, the culture is thriving. He's showing me what Egypt looks like, you know, way back when. And this is a very clear, lucid dream. I couldn't have imagined this when I went to sleep. And he answered my question. He said, we had a catastrophe coming that came so fast, a pole shift and massive destruction to the earth. He said, we only had minutes to get in the pyramid. He goes in the pyramid. He turns on an oscillator drive that creates a vortex right above the capstone and burns a hole in our space-time dimension. And it's spinning so fast, him and I go through the vortex, and these other gods and goddesses go through it. And we're all of a sudden, we're in a new planet in another star system, and we're safe. And he said, not all of us made it through, and when the dust settled on Earth and we came back to Earth, people worshipped us as gods and goddesses, but really we were just a very advanced civilization. And the pyramids still worked in the early days. They still worked. They didn't stop working. And there was a power source. So you need an electric charge to get oscillations of electrons to start spinning in granite. Granite is just as good mm-hmm. as quartz crystal, and so is limestone.
Were there any types of pyramid spheres around the areas that this Malaysian jet disappeared?
Okay, then we're going to get into that now, because this is really amazing. Now, recently, I've had dozens and dozens of visits with different star system beings. I mainly focus on Pleiades and Sirius, where I've had the most luck. At one point, before we get to the Malaysian jet here really quickly, because we're not time before the top of the hour here.
Yeah.
I was having regular conversations with Sirius, and I do the frequencies when that star is up and in the sky. Sirius is very close. It's only 8.7 light years away. And it's the frequency of Sirius B is almost identical to the frequency of Earth because it's almost the same size as Earth, and it's actually a very dense diamond-like, you know, star. And Sirius A is a huge star and has a very low frequency. But they started appearing to me and telling me exactly how these micro wormholes work. You don't need to create a huge wormhole with a huge amount of energy, as Einstein-Rosenbridges predict, but rather you take mass, and instead of making it heavier and having to fold the fabric of space-time, you matter turns into pure light energy, and it doesn't weigh anything more, so the wormhole doesn't cost you that much money. There's now new theories in wormholes that you don't need the energy to create the wormhole. You just need to quantum entangle two points anywhere in space, and the universe creates the wormhole. And I read this article in a science magazine recently by some new physicists. And I thought, wow, that means you just need to know the frequency of where you want to go and generate that frequency in a vortex, a powerful magnetic vortex. And you can, at this point, I believe my friend's box-cutting knife and my light bulb is in some other star system right now. So what happens? This gets really deep. In the early days, Einstein, Paul Dirac, and all the greatest physicists at Bell Labs were working on the hidden power of crystals, believe it or not, before World War One and Two took over their consciousness. And they were being hired to study the effects of something called the hidden properties of crystals and crystalline materials, which includes metals, because there's crystal lattice and structure in metals as well as quartz crystal and different gems. And these guys had literally crystals, like New Age people, sitting on the desk and doing experiments with them. And they found that crystals had these mini vortexes called semiconductor holes, which to this day nobody understands very well at all. Only Paul Dirac. I read these old physics manuals and books that are out of print. And Paul Dirac is the only one who won the Nobel Prize who could explain semiconductor holes. Semiconductor means quartz crystal.
And do you think this is what the jet went through?
Yeah, you're gonna see what happens.
Because we have like 4 minutes.
Okay, so what happens is, when you make a jet out of exotic metals, there are certain metals that have these little vortex holes in the material. And if you know how to activate the material, which is what I believe happened to my disappearing pendants and my disappearing light bulb, if you know how to create the right conditions, you will cause a quantum tunneling event in the quartz. And certain types of aluminum have silica blends into it, and the new Boeing jets have titanium, aluminum, and silica in the mix. And at the right temperature and the right friction and the right magnetic field, if one of those holes gets activated in the material, it will open up and create a tiny wormhole. But a tiny wormhole is big enough to swallow a whole jet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when I was doing star communications with Sirius, they told me in the early days they had jets like we do, and they started making the jets out of exotic metals to get lighter and faster.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And one of these wormholes opened up, and they started losing jets. And this was before the Boeing jet disappeared, the Malaysian flight. So I didn't even know about that yet. And they said that we learned how to stimulate the materials to open up the holes without friction and heat with high velocity travel. And we started doing it, and they were showing me going forward through the wormhole, going backwards through the wormhole, how they got between Sirius and here. And Robert Temple, who wrote the Sirius Mystery, the very famous British astronomer, you know, with high education credentials, risked his entire career to write a book called The Sirius Mystery, where he believes the gods of ancient Egypt came from Sirius, including Isis, just as I had experienced. And I've had Isis standing right in front of me with my eyes open, 7 feet tall, very, very tall woman. And this is what Robert Temple says they did. They came here. They were mermaid and merman. And once you open a regular pathway vortex wormhole, it stays open for a long time. And if you run the pyramid vortex oscillators, it remains open, and it's easier to get in and out of it. That's what happened at Roswell by accident. That's why the craft came in when we tested the first atomic bomb July 22nd, 1945. Only 2 years later, the UFOs only had so much time to teach us and warn us and get back through the hole before it closed.
You were explaining that. That is, and this is the information that came down during this time. Fascinating, fascinating information. All right, we're going to come back with David Cerrito. We're going to be taking your calls answering some questions about this. So we will be back. Thank you so much, David. Very interesting.